Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 6, 2011. I'm David McLaughlin, and with me, as always, Catherine Smith. Welcome.
Hello.
And Tim Shiflett. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. Well, got a special guest come here in about 5 minutes, thanks to Catherine. State Senator Jason Carter will join us. Of course, his grandfather's on the show every week in our opening, but he's going to come on and talk about the Hope Scholarship and the changes that the Republicans have proposed and the Democratic alternative and the differences of those two and why he believes the Democratic alternative is better. And then, of course, we'll talk about a whole host of other legislative topics in Georgia because there is no shortage of wrong priorities this past week. And then we'll get to some other polling in Virginia, North Carolina, Mississippi just had their qualifying end. And so we'll just get to all that. But, you know, Jason's going to come on and talk about hope first thing. And I don't know that we can get to everything or get, you know, much in anything before Jason comes on. But I thought we could get to one of those Georgia topics ahead before it and then maybe talk a little bit after, and that would be the immigration bill. It was kind of interesting. The immigration bill came up, and it seemed to have as many critics on Peach Pundit that seemed to be Republican critics as you've heard from, you know, Democratic critics. Catherine, what did you think of that, the fact that they're bringing the bill up, a very Arizona-like bill, and that it's had a little bit of Republican pushback?
Well, I have to be honest with you, I think it's kind of hard to talk about the immigration bill without talking about the Hope Scholarship bill at the same time, because I think the timing was intentional. I think they passed the Hope out of the House and immediately brought up the immigration bill to deflect some attention from the Hope. But we can talk about that later, about the strategy of the Republicans on that. I was surprised that it went through so quickly because there are a lot of you know, conservatives or Republicans who are not in favor of this this immigration bill because it's very bad for business. It's, you know, for the agricultural business, it's going to be very difficult. It's also bad for the police and because the police are going to have to play a role in all this. And some of these counties in South Georgia where there's a lot of agricultural workers who may or may not be documented, some of them only have one or two sheriffs, and if they've got to pile people in a car and drive them to Atlanta to ICE, it's a big problem. And I was just kind of surprised that it went through so quickly. But I'm always surprised, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the dirty little secret that a lot of folks don't want to mention is immigration is a situation where a lot of your more, you know, not cultural conservatives, but, you know, ones that, you know, just look at things and, you know, right and wrong and you know, they're taking our jobs, that kind of thing. That branch of the Republican Party, they're interested in immigration reform. And then, of course, your Chamber of Commerce Republicans that, you know, and they want to have labor come from this source instead of that source because you don't have to pay Social Security, you don't have to pay health care, you can pay a lower wage in a lot of cases. It's actually under the minimum wage. They don't necessarily want to push for immigration reform as much. So you kind of have two factions of the Republican Party warring with each other. And then Democrats, even be it some, you know, Democrats in the minority at a state house level or the president, you know, actually can be on both sides at times depending on which angle of the issue you're looking at. Because, like, of course, the Democratic Party doesn't have a real problem with the AccuCheck system where they check people's citizenship, but then there's not as much of a, you know, worrying about color of somebody's skin so much, you know, where it might be somewhat in some, you know, segments in the Republican Party. Tim, what's your thoughts on this thing?
Well, Catherine touched on a lot of good points. 50% of the agriculture workers in Georgia might be immigrants, that high number. This thing's going over to the Senate. The agriculture lobby is going to be over there waiting. It's going to run into some problems. This group or that group is going to want an exception. So the bill that comes back out of the Senate might not look a whole lot like the one that just passed the House. Then they're going to have to reconcile their differences. Then we're talking about the time constraints, you know, of our legislature, that things have to be done in a certain time. I'm not going to be for sure that they're going to come up with a final bill. I guess we'll just have to see. But I think the bill that just passed the House is DOA over there, David.
Yeah. The big question
I
have,
really think,
and
it's all about the hope. I really think it's about the hope legislation.
I think
it would not surprise me at all if they sat on that bill in the Senate and didn't do anything with it. And then they can say, well, we tried to get immigration, but we got held up in the Senate, and we couldn't do it in time for crossover day. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think they were trying to deflect attention from the fact that they were pushing that hope bill down everybody's throat. But
the agriculture lobby don't like this bill a little bit, and they're going to let it be known over there in the Senate.
Yeah.
You're going to see it.
Yeah, well, and here's my question. I think this gets to kind of a deeper issue, and I wish somebody would study it and come up with, you know, a researched reason, if you will. But, okay, our unemployment in Georgia is about 9%, and mm-hmm. let's say that the majority of that 9% is white and black Georgians. Why is it not that you take these white and black Georgians that are out of work, and they take jobs in agriculture, landscaping, chicken plants, building houses, you know, some of your house construction, for jobs in which the Latino workers come in to be in workers. Why hasn't somebody seen, you know, why won't Georgians that are unemployed do these jobs? I mean, there's obviously some reason why there's not a match there.
It's the reason
they can't get hired.
It's a regional thing, too. I mean, agriculture is prevalent in one certain part of the state. A lot of unemployment is in the big metro areas. So you're asking whole groups, large groups of people to transplant themselves for jobs that, frankly,
don't pay
a whole lot of money. So,
and then you get to the market,
guys,
and you say, why isn't the job worth pay more money? But we got our guest on, so let's go ahead and not – we'll pick this discussion back up. Welcome, Senator Carter.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah. Last time you were on, we had Jason Carter. First time we've had State Senator Carter. Well, I know that this past week or so, you've spent a lot of time thinking about and talking about the Hope Scholarship. Now, when we first came out, the House, both Democrats and Republicans and the governor, seemed to kind of be on board with the same bill. Then there became a Senate alternative from the Democratic Party. Tell us about that.
Well, the governor's bill, as I'm sure y'all know, calls for an immediate cut of almost 20% to the Hope Scholarship. So in addition to eliminating books and fees, and that cut to the scholarship will actually grow over time so that the cost to students is going to go up every year, assuming tuition and lottery goes as it's been going. And so you're really talking about changing the Hope Scholarship at a very fundamental level from what it used to be. And you're talking about cutting a lot of kids and deserving students who've done well in school. You're talking about knocking them out of college. So there's going to be fewer people able to afford college, fewer people able to graduate from college. And we didn't think that was an acceptable solution, frankly. And so we, as you mentioned, came up with our own plan that rather than change the amount of the scholarship based on lottery revenues, we would change the the income eligibility based on lottery revenues so that every year we would calculate an income cap that would maximize the number of students who would receive the full HOPE scholarship. And next year, based on the numbers, it would be $140,000, which would cover 95% of all Georgia families. So that's our basic fix with regard to the scholarship. And then there's other things in the bill that we would also do, but I'll let you guys ask me if you want to hear about the rest.
Well, go ahead and tell us about that now. I think it's good to set the whole thing up. What are some other changes?
Well, some of the other problems specifically that we found when we ran the numbers are, you know, our lottery corporation pays a certain percentage of its revenues into the education account, which is the account that is used to fund HOPE and Georgia's pre-K program. And the lottery corporation sends 26% approximately of that revenue into this education account. Other lotteries, the national average is 30%. So we're 4% below the national average. And if we came up even 2%, so half of the way, but you know, get closer to the national average, that would be worth about $40 million, $45 million, and maybe more. And the other thing is that the governor originally proposed that the commission that goes to the lottery retailers, the convenience stores, would be cut to 5%. And the retailers went crazy and engaged in a big lobbying campaign, and that bumped from 5% back up to 6% in the House. So for the record, the only substantive change to the bill has been that listening to the retailers on that issue. And we think it should go back to 5%. And those changes in the way that the Lottery Corporation funds the education account would give us enough money to solve all of the pre-K problems that are there now from a funding standpoint. And pre-K really is where our state money almost is best spent. I mean, there's almost no better investment dollar for dollar for the state than investing in pre-K. So that was another piece that we felt like we needed to preserve the pre-K program as a full-day program for a variety of reasons. And we thought we could do that with these relatively minor, frankly, and sensible changes to the way the Lottery Corporation funds the education account.
Yes. Talking about pre-K, when we were discussed it last week, when you start cutting the hours, I know at the same time for the past few years, the daycare funds that parents can get, particularly single mothers can get, either if it's children that aren't yet ready for pre-K or after-school care, for kids that are already in pre-K or above, has been being cut for several years now. Because they were cutting the amount of time that students could be in pre-K, were they going to add back revenues to that program, or was it just a problem that mothers would have to fix?
It was just a problem that families who are already hurting were going to have to scramble and try to fix. I mean, the cutting of pre-K from a full day to a half day would have been very risky, very troubling for families, as you mentioned, who have to find additional child care, have to find additional transportation. It would have been troubling because you have a lot of certified teachers. I mean, one of the best aspects of Georgia's pre-K program, is that we have really well-qualified, great teachers there. And if you cut all those teachers from full-time to part-time, a lot of those folks are going to have to get different jobs because they're not in it to be a part. They can't be a part-time employee. So you're going to have a different set of teachers, and you really change the economics for the private providers who do 60% of all of the pre-K in Georgia. So it would have really upset the apple cart. And to Governor Deal's credit, it is important to note that they really have listened to the outcry over pre-K. And I believe, and we have heard directly from the governor, frankly, said to me the other day that we were going to see a new proposal on pre-K after all of the discussion that they've had on that. So I do think that the governor has indicated some flexibility with regard to pre-K, and we'll look forward to hearing from him on that.
Yes. Well, I do have some HOPE scholarship questions, but I don't like to take up all the questions with two good co-hosts here. So, Catherine, what are some questions you have on the HOPE scholarship for pre-K?
Well, thank you very much, Senator Carter, for being on tonight. I'm glad that we could work that out. It's very helpful. I think a lot of people are mystified by some of these issues, and it's helpful to have you here to talk about it. I want to talk a little bit about the politics of it. I don't know if you listened before you came on, but I was really surprised at the immigration, how quickly the immigration bill went through on Thursday. And it seemed to me like it was a way of deflecting attention to the Hope Scholarship discussion, because all of a sudden everybody was all fired up about immigration, and all this discussion about Hope sort of went away. And I wonder if you had any thoughts about that.
Well, you know, I'm still sort of learning my way around the politics world down there at the Capitol and how things get scheduled, for example. I mean, you know, tomorrow, you know, if you look at the Senate calendar, it is three bills about the 10th Amendment. And it's just like, all right, I mean, you know, some of these things are worth talking about. Everybody has the right to drop their own bill, and I understand that this is an incredibly important issue to some people. But, you know, we have a lot to deal with in the state, and to spend a whole day in the Senate just on the 10th Amendment seems to be maybe a different priority, I guess, than I would give to those issues. And so, you know, I think that I do think that people want to talk about Hope less and less, because the longer we look at the plan that the governor has proposed, the worse it gets.
Right. And I was also wondering this weekend if you have reached out to any of the Republicans that might be amenable to these different approach, and if you've gotten any positive response from any Republicans.
Definitely. I mean, there's bipartisan concern about the bill, and particularly with regard to the Lottery Corporation and the way that it has been treated as compared to how it ought to be treated. There's bipartisan concern about that. There's bipartisan concern about whether or not we can grandfather in the current students and the high school seniors who have had no opportunity to plan for this. You know, that wasn't even, we tried to offer amendments that would have allowed the grandfathering in of all of the current students, and that was shut down in the committee, by the governor's floor leader, who's the chair of the Higher Education Committee. So they wouldn't even consider that issue. But there is bipartisan concern in the Senate on those issues. In addition, I think the impact of this plan in rural Georgia is really marked. And one of the things that we did, in addition to the first things I described, is the Zell Miller Scholarship that the governor has proposed, which would be tied to an SAT score, would shut out huge communities in Georgia. And what we've proposed as an alternative is giving the Zell Miller Scholarship to the top 3% of every high school in Georgia. And there are a lot of rural legislators who are Republicans who really do feel that they want to preserve the Hope Scholarship for their communities, And that is something that they're very concerned with for a variety of reasons. And so we've heard from a lot of them. You know, this debate is not just Democrat versus Republican, but it really is an urban versus rural thing, I think, within the Republican Party. So it will be interesting to see how this all unfolds in the next couple of days.
Well, yeah, I've looked at that map with the SAT averages, and
yeah,
it's shocking. I mean, it's really shocking. Like, we're looking at, you know, most of South Georgia with no opportunity for the Zell Miller Scholarship, really. I mean, most of Southern Georgia and other parts too, but it's
really
shocking when you. And it seems to be against the spirit of the Hope Scholarship of, you know, providing opportunities for college-bound students across the state. So it's like, really, you're just going to eliminate the whole swath of counties because they haven't performed on the SATs as well, even though they're good students and, you know. Well,
yeah,
is there anything else?
That message has resonated within the rural folks in the Senate. And I think, you know, one of the things we did on Friday is, you know, I wrote a little note to each senator, and I let them know, you know, pick a senator. Senator Goggins, for example, who's a great guy, you know, in his district, there's 11 counties, and under our plan, we would save the Hope Scholarship for virtually every student in those counties. So we listed the counties and the number of students current Hope Scholars who would save their full scholarship under our plan, and it was like 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%, 95%. you know, throughout the counties that he represents. And so it's really put, you know, rural legislators in a tough bind because they're either going to vote to save the Hope Scholarship for almost all of the Hope Scholars in their district or cut it by 20% for all of those same kids.
Well, I'm really happy that you and the other people that are working on this, sounds like you've got a good group of people, and you've been really, you know, I saw you on TV yesterday. I heard you, you know, I heard Stacey on the radio. Everybody's like, and I saw all the op-eds in the paper. So I'm glad that people are paying attention, and I think, you know, all of us have a role to play in making sure the word gets out. I've seen a lot of activity on Facebook and on the blog, so I think it's kind of an opportunity for all of us to get more engaged, and I'm glad that you're willing to help us with that. And now I'm going to pass it over to Tim.
Good evening, Senator. Thank you for being with us tonight. And it's the politics of the thing I wanted to ask you about first, because you're on the ground right there in the Capitol. Is there the perception amongst the minority on this issue that this was something of a round-through job or a hurry-up thing simply because the governor knew that he had the votes to easily pass it without opposition?
I mean, certainly in the Senate, that's how it's gone down. I mean, you know, they have come through. They have refused to accept any substantive amendments, and that's that. I mean, so the short answer to your question is yes. It has not been bipartisan in any way in the Senate. There has not been any real input in the Senate at all from the Democratic Party. And as I mentioned before, even from the Republicans that have concerns. I mean, this has been a lightning-fast, bulldozing process.
Wow. And you know, there are a lot of folks all over the great state of Georgia that are listening to us tonight, so I needed to ask you this as well. If this all goes through as is and becomes law, will the average citizen who applies for HOPE begin to feel the adverse effects of these changes immediately?
Yes. My understanding of this, of the bill, is that it will calculate a formula for the upcoming semester, and that formula will provide, rather than a full scholarship, it will provide about 80% of tuition. So every HOPE scholar, every senior in high school is going to be looking at a substantial cost increase for going to college this fall. Plus, that's on top of cuts to the former payments for books and fees. So the effective increase in cost is going to be sharp.
Well, then what can the average citizen do immediately to make themselves heard in a big way on this thing?
I mean, this right now, I think the decision-making authority at this point is in the governor's office. And so folks need to be heard by the governor. And I think that calling the governor's office, calling the governor's floor leaders in the Senate, Jim Butterworth, Ronnie Chance, and Senator Fred Jackson, I think that that would be an effective thing. I mean, you know, showing up, you know, and letting at the Capitol and letting the governor know how important this is, that we want to ensure that we can give the HOPE Scholarship to as many, a meaningful HOPE Scholarship to as many students as we can, is incredibly important. And I think that folks should do that. But, yeah, get on the phone. I mean, get on the emails. People listen. It matters. I'll tell you what, I sit down there every day and I'm always influenced by the calls and the emails that I get.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. David?
Yes.
I have one more question. Is that okay, David?
Sure.
Senator Carter, in the Republican bill, isn't there like a recalculation of the scholarship every year?
Yes. It will change every year. That's one of the problems we have with it. HOPE has always been a rock on which people can plan for college. And now it is, you know, absolutely a shifting sand. There is no way to know from year to year what it's going to be. Now, there is a provision in the bill that's somewhat complicated. I'm not sure I understand it, frankly, that allows for the reserve to be drawn on to sort of minimize the impact of any sharp changes, but it's totally unclear how that's going to work. And the short answer is yes, the amount of the scholarship will change every year, so you're not going to know how much you're going to have to pay to go to college until they make that announcement.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, David. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I had two more questions that are related to funding it. We discussed last week is, you know, while we hear that, you know, the economy's bad, the tax revenues are down, the lottery revenues are down, and obviously something has to be done, be it an income cap or, you know, a SAT requirement. Here's the thing. When the economy comes back, when the tax revenues increase, if more lottery tickets are purchased and things are better, do you think under the governor's proposal, if it's passed, you know, mainly in full, is it going to be where it'll change back to how we've known Hope throughout the 90s and the 2000s if the economy comes back? Or do you think the Republicans and the governor want to keep some type of SAT requirement in the mix?
Well, you know, the Hope Scholarship itself under the governor's plan, to be clear, the SAT piece is for the people who get what's called now a Zell Miller Scholarship, and they would get the full tuition. That looks like Hope used to look. That 1,200 on the SAT and a 3.7 grade point average, which is about 10% of Hope recipients, that looks like how Hope used to be. For everybody else, you're looking at this amount that next year is going to be about 80% of tuition. That's going to change every year. It's certainly possible that the lottery revenues would go through the roof and tuition would not rise too much, and you would get to a point where you're getting a full scholarship again. But that's always going to fluctuate with the vagaries of the lottery and the tuition amounts. So it's unclear. It's certainly possible. But just so you know, if things go like they've been going for the last 10 years, where the lottery revenues have increased about 2.5% a year, and tuition has increased about, you know, 16% a year, then these are rough numbers, and the tuition changes from school to school, so don't hold me to those numbers. But you're talking about basically, just to be specific, at Georgia Southern, for example, tuition has gone up 150%. Lottery revenues have gone up 30%. If that happens over the next 10 years, then Hope is going to pay 50% of the tuition at Georgia Southern, which is not what it used to do. I mean, so it's going to be a dramatic difference. And I think that as best we can tell, that's the most likely outcome, although there is some remote possibility that things could get back to where they were.
Yes. And the other question I had is, anybody at the Capitol talked about somehow tying playing lottery to letting you be more eligible for Hope scholarships, like, for whatever reason, there's a scarcity now of Hope scholarships, and we have to either put an income cap, an SAT piece in, whatever it may be. And if you somehow, and I know the way lottery's done, you just have tickets, but if there's some way you could have a little card, almost like you go to Kroger and you have a shopper card, and then say, look, these people played a lot of lottery. They definitely put money in the system. They should then have more right to get us a Hope scholarship in some way. It sounds crazy, but then if it caused more people to think about, oh, the reason Hope is funded is through play in the lottery, you know, and obviously you don't want people taking their whole paycheck and buying scratching tickets.
Right.
But if everybody might play Mega Millions and Powerball once a week, there might be more revenue for Hope and Pre-K.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll say this. That's not a bad idea, but I do think that we have to remember the only reason that we allowed a lottery in this state. You know, the point you make is really important, because the folks that play the lottery are not the folks that get the Hope Scholarship for the most part now. And what you have is a big shift in, you know, where the places from whence that lottery money comes are not the folks that it gives back to as the Hope Scholarship today. You know, and the public benefit of the lottery is negligible in my view. I mean, it's basically gambling. And while I have no problem, you know, with gambling as a concept, I don't think there's any great public good that comes from it. So when we maximize our lottery revenues, the only reason we allow a lottery is because we think that there's some big percentage of those revenues that's going to go to fund the things we do care about, like pre-K and Hope. So we do need to think about where that money is coming from, the impact of the lottery on our communities, and particularly the ones that we represent as Democrats, and do what we can to balance it a little bit better with what the public good that comes from it, which is just in that education account. Which, to me, is another reason to argue for increasing the percentage that of the lottery revenues that get paid towards education.
Yes. Okay. Well,
I have one more question.
Go ahead, Catherine. Sure.
Now, Catherine, if you just want to talk, you call me on my cell phone.
Well, I was wondering, you know, a lot of times we think about the Hope Scholarship and higher education in general, education in general, is something that really only affects people who have children or grandchildren. But I'm not a parent, but this is very important to me as a business owner. And I just wonder if you've gotten any reaction from the business community, because the Hope Scholarship really does improve our competitive edge. You know, people want to come here. It's always been a place where people, like for the last 20 years, people want to come and have their children go to school here so that they can, you know, take advantage of the Hope Scholarship and the good schools that we have here. Has there been any outreach to the, you know, chamber and the business community on these issues?
Well, I think the economic impact, I mean, the most important thing to the business community right now, and they'll tell you this almost uniformly, is ensuring that we have the kind of well-educated people that we need in order to compete in the global economy, not now, but in 10 years. And, you know, the maximizing the number of college graduates, maximizing the number of kids that come into elementary school ready to learn, all of that is almost literally the most important thing we can do for our economy and for the business environment and for everything else. And so from beginning to end, this issue is incredibly important to the business community. And I think that, you know, this is where the politics comes in. And like I said, I'm just learning the politics piece. But there's no doubt that from a business standpoint and from an economic standpoint, we have to maximize the number of people who are getting college degrees. We have to maximize the number of people who are ready to learn when they get into school. And we think that our plan does that, and we think that the governor's plan does not. And that's what we've been talking about. That's what we've been talking about.
Yeah, I think it's really important for the future, for keeping our economic edge. It's really important. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. I think that's all my questions.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
I appreciate you as always. So.
Well, thanks again for coming on and sharing with us.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I've been thinking about this so much the last few days. I'm just full of questions.
Yeah. You know,
well,
David,
that's what the show is.
That young fellow we just had reminds me of another state senator that I met down there in Rome in, like, 1966. And I was trying to think of his name. I believe it was Jimmy Carter or something like that. Just thought I'd throw that out there, too.
The first president I voted for.
Yeah. Well, I guess we were talking about immigration, and, Catherine, you were talking about how you thought they were connected as a way. But you know, I posed a question to y'all about, and I think, Tim, you're on to something where you said agriculture is different, where folks that are unemployed in metro Atlanta can't necessarily go to Moultrie every day and farm and that kind of thing. But then you have chicken plants. You have home building can be anywhere in the state. And particularly that's the one I think, because obviously, I mean, if you can construct a home, that's not a bad paying job. I mean, that's a job that seems anybody of any background would want. Why can't we just match the workers up to the jobs? And I think I know the answer. And that's
the answer
because they're paying people less than the market calls for. And my understanding would be if the market calls
for
something.
The
law, I know, but
you
don't even
calls for.
But we're using these market economics that Republicans love. That, I mean, if the market says that somebody hammering boards together, make a frame of a house, ought to be paid $11 an hour, that's what the market calls for.
You know, David, the honest thing is and we want to be honest here, is that these people talk all this, any immigration rhetoric and this and that and the other, throw them out. And at the same time, these chicken plants, these companies like that, they actually have people stationed down on the borders. When these people cross, to recruit them to come and work in their businesses and in agriculture and stuff, because they know they can do what Catherine just said, which is pay them less money. I mean, it's just
but
the
it's
way
not
it
just
is.
That. It's the taxes. It's the workman's compensation insurance.
Right.
It's
all of that.
Benefits. It's safety. There's all kinds of things involved in it. You know, I have a friend who's always saying, "Throw the bums out." And I always say to him, "Okay, well, that's fine with me, and I'm okay paying $7 for my chicken sandwich from McDonald's. Are you?" Because that's what it comes down to. It's all about economics. You know, we're all happy because we pay, you know, whatever. I don't even know. I don't buy at McDonald's, but you know, $2 or whatever it is for a chicken sandwich, $2.50. But if you had, you know, eligible, documented, legal workers working in those chicken plants, you the prices of everything would go up.
Yeah, I mean,
or their profits
thing.
Would go down, and they can't let their profits go down because they have shareholders to answer to.
Yeah, I mean,
and they are certainly.
That's the thing that the discussion that we need to have as Americans is like, let's see. I mean, I agree. If we could get every employee, that'd be awesome. Now, what would that cost? What would that mean? I mean, but let's get into it, and you know,
well, simple economics also dictates, David, that the agriculture lobby, the hospitality lobby, some of these other lobbies that employ these people are not going to let this thing sail through the state Senate. There's going to be something of a tussle there.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yes, but, Catherine, I do have to take issue. I have had the dollar chicken sandwich at McDonald's, and I'll be honest, I don't know that the chicken industry has much to do with the McChicken. Spend you a buck sometime and have one, and you'll notice that it doesn't resemble the chicken taste. The pepper industry might be, you know, big and heavy on that. They put a pepper on it so you don't notice it's really not chicken. But, another issue that came up before the State House today that makes the immigration of the HOPE changes look completely statesmanlike was a bill brought up by Representative Waycross. And, Tim, I believe you actually crafted an outrage about it. So let's let you set it up, and then we'll discuss it.
No, where do I even start here with this one? Well, look, I've been thinking a lot lately about the way things were and the way they are now. We've always had our conspiracy nuts, I know. Back in the 60s, it was groups like the John Birch Society. They admired Joe McCarthy. They hated Israel for some reason, probably anti-Semitism, and they thought that everyone that disagreed with them was just a part of a worldwide communist conspiracy. And, of course, the UN and our government was in on it, too. Their founder even called President Eisenhower a deliberate agent of the communist conspiracy. But even though they had about 25,000 members nationally, they were largely laughed at, not taken seriously. People were overall, to me, more responsible than a guy like, Neil Forbes, for instance, who was around then too, for instance, was considered to be a fringe kind of guy, or he would be considered to be more mainstream now. And the two political parties in that time were controlled by moderates and liberals. And it showed in things like the election of 64, for instance, when the American people totally repudiated the firebrand of Barry Goldwater. But nowadays, it just seems that things lurch further and further into this paranoid state of mass delusion and affects growing numbers of people. About 10 years ago, the left wing got in on the act with a bunch called truthers. They thought that George Bush and the U.S. government had actually created 9/11 and pulled off the attack themselves. They had all these little videos and talking points.
And, of course, they were totally debunked. I remember, in particular, that Popular Mechanics had a series of excellent articles which took on the crazy assertions point by point. But you know what? It never fazed those guys because conspiracy people are a rare breed. They take what available facts there are, and they make them fit into whatever nuthouse theory they are espousing, like some unearthly jigsaw puzzle or something. And they will not be moved, and they will not be reasoned with. And now we have the birthers, born on the right wing. They had their videos and talking points, too. And they're even worse than the truthers ever were. At least the truthers talked about, I don't know, some technical stuff like stress points, explosion possibilities and such. This birther crowd, on the other hand, just seems to throw fecal matter toward the wall in the hope that something might stick. And of course, nothing ever does. So now we come to one Georgia legislator, Representative Mark Hatfield of Waycross. His bill that he introduced says, in essence, that next year's presidential and vice presidential candidates must prove beyond any doubt that they were born on American soil or they can't appear on the Georgia ballot. What he really means, of course, is that President Obama must do that. And if you listeners want to just light this one off, then consider this. 92 Republicans and one Democrat signed this bill as co-sponsors. That would be enough votes to pass the House. Had Speaker Ralston not spoken out against this bill, I have to wonder if they would have actually passed this thing. But now the lone Democrat, and at last count, about 29 of the Republicans had withdrawn their names from the bill, so the bill will probably languish in committee or something. But the deeper problems associated with this nonsense have not gone away. That is, this is a total waste of the taxpayer time. The GOP legislature has ignored the water problem for a decade, even in the face of a devastating drought. They have responded to the funding of vital education by gutting programs and producing no viable alternatives. They have allowed the transportation problem to worsen with no concrete plans other than to let individual counties vote on issues. They really are statewide problems. They have produced no jobs, making Georgia consistently higher in unemployment than the national average. They run record deficits when they inherited surpluses. And their response? Well, let's introduce a birther bill. Let the country laugh at us and, I don't know, play the banjo in Deliverance or something. Oh good grief. Hatfield even adds to the stupidity level by with a straight face saying he's not really a birther. Oh, I guess he's just angling for an invite to the next White House state dinner or something. Or he's, in my opinion, fruity as a damn nutcake. These people want to actually discuss this stuff with me sometimes. Okay, don't. You know why? Some things just really don't need to be discussed because they're crazy. I'm not going to meet you in the middle on this. There is no middle. There's no point. The irrefutable evidence is already out there that you don't want to acknowledge. The doctor who heads the Hawaii Department of Public Health, the former Republican governor of Hawaii, the Pulitzer Prize-winning St. Petersburg Times FactCheck.org, and the Chicago Tribune all say that people from them actually saw the original birth certificate. Two newspapers published the president's birth announcement in 1961. The state of Hawaii published a record of live birth for all to see. If that is not enough, then get over it. Nothing will suffice for you anyway. You want to be crazy? Well, be crazy. I don't care. But Representative Hatfield, if you're out there listening tonight, if you get crazy on my dime, then that's another story. My tax money pays for you to be down there. You act like a total idiot and bring this state shame nationally, and I submit you are unfit to hold any elective office. So So I'm calling on you to just simply go away. And I imagine you won't listen to me, of course, but the voters down in Waycross might get your attention. And if they don't hold you accountable for this, then all I can say is that they deserve the second-rate representation you give. But what you should do is withdraw that bill right now, apologize, I don't know, to everybody in the Western world, and then hold your nose. That's so it won't bleed when the voters kick your ass, David.
Yes, I saw this, and, you know, we've talked about printing money in some other states and just different things to bring embarrassment, and this is one of the latest in the South.
Why do they even waste their time?
Yeah, I just kind of thought this whole birther thing had kind of, you know, as far as the you know, the critical mass of it had kind of subsided. It was just the, you know, last crazies that believed in it. But 91 state House members actually wanted to not only say they'd vote for it, 93 but wanted to co-sponsor the thing.
That's enough to pass it.
I mean,
what if the speaker
hard
hadn't
to believe.
Spoken
yeah,
up?
I mean, yeah, it's just you know, beyond belief.
He derailed it by himself. To his credit, he derailed it by himself. What if he hadn't spoken out? Do y'all think this thing might have actually had a chance to pass?
Well, and the scary
thing
is,
I mean,
you know,
they've got control.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I believe it, too. I'll tell you this, though. I think that a lot of the folks that co-sponsored it probably either A, don't believe the president was born anywhere other than Hawaii, or B, even think it matters.
You know
but
what?
They think that so many of their constituents think it does that they feel if they're going to be anything, the Republican Party, they have to do this crazy crap. And that's, to me, one of the scariest things. They're getting it's the tail wagging the dog. And these folks just will do anything to move up in politics, no matter how bizarre it is. That's the saddest state of affairs.
Oh, I'm just shuddering, though. I mean, how more bizarre is this going to get? Aren't we lately talking about a lot of stuff like this on this show? I mean,
yeah, it's something we all
dreamed of doing this stuff, you know, a while back. And, I mean, these are our elected representatives. I mean, good grief.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I have a lot of problems with it. But if there weren't so many other problems that we're facing, like you outlined in your outrage, then I'd still be outraged by it. But you know, really, this is what we choose to put our effort into is, you know, this, and then what did Senator Carter say? They've got three bills on the 10th Amendment tomorrow, you know? Really? Like, meanwhile, like you said, transportation is floundering. We have no hope for, you know, the situation with the water. It just, you know, is sitting on a back burner somewhere with no attention.
People like working, you know?
Your job, the number one problem in pretty much every state in America, the tax rolls are down and unemployment's getting better, but it's not, you know, you still want to try to lower your unemployment rate lower than your neighbors, if you will, because you got to fight for what jobs there are. I mean, plants are moving around, different things, and you do this nonsense, you look backward. I mean, you know, you think about Waycross. Waycross, with the Ware Magnet Academy, it probably has one of the best educational systems for anywhere in rural Georgia, and, you know, you got people doing this nonsense representing them. They don't look educated.
Let me ask you this. Of course, this you know, kind of made national news, and the administration looks at this, and the Georgia congressional delegation looks at this, and they're trying to attain funding for, I don't know, the Savannah River or the Savannah Harbor dredging project over there. How do you think that's going to play with them? Huh?
Not that well.
Yeah. No, it's just comical in a sad way. Well, we have spent so much of the show on Georgia topics because, you know, obviously our guests wanted to have on, but then other topics came up that were just too noteworthy not to mention. But let's kind of shift gears for the last 11 minutes of the show. And one state that I think we kind of don't spend as much time on as others, for whatever reason, is Tennessee. Maybe their politics are a little more civil. Maybe we don't have as good of contacts in the state. But I did read an article recently talking about the U.S. Senate seat up there, and they talked about how one of the best candidates the Democratic Party could field for Bob Corker's state Senate seat would be current mayor Carl Dean. And they also kind of got into a larger point of, for years, if someone won the mayoralship of Knoxville, Memphis, Nashville, or Chattanooga, the four big cities, it really, that was kind of where they, their career peaked. Then Phil Bredesen was governor from being mayor of Nashville. Then Bob Corker was mayor of Chattanooga. He won statewide office. And then, I guess most recently, their newest U.S. senator and their current governor, not their newest U.S. senator, their current governor, he was mayor of Knoxville. So mayors are having a much better track record recently. Carl Dean seems to be pretty popular. He actually has a mayoral election coming up this year. Of course, he has to win that and probably win it not in a squeaker. But, Tim, what kind of candidate do you think Carl Dean will make for U.S. Senate against Bob Corker?
Well, he'd be a Phil Bredesen type, David. He's pretty moderate on the issues. As a matter of fact, Governor Bredesen speaks glowingly of him. Moderation seems to be prevalent, I've noticed, in both parties in that state, and always has been. It's been a different type of state, and it would make sense that the big city mayors up there would dominate because they have a natural voter base to draw from, and also they obviously are very astute at doing things like raising money, and most of them govern as moderates and have a good moderate record to run on. So it makes perfect sense to me that we need to keep our eye on this guy as a future Democratic star in Tennessee.
Yes, Catherine, your thoughts on Carl Dean and just mayors of these cities kind of taking over Tennessee politics?
Well, I think mayors, in general, tend to make, especially the bigger cities, tend to make good leader. They are well versed in the management and economics of a larger municipality. And we often talk about the future for our Atlanta mayor Kasim Reed. So I don't think it's a surprise. I think that in the past we looked to governors and state senators and state legislators as, climbing up the ladder. But I think as the cities have faced more economic and transportation and those kinds of issues, I think they become much more appealing for more, higher leadership. So I think it's a good sign, actually. I think, and it sounds like Dean is a good guy, and of course I love the name. But I think it'll be interesting to watch his, star rise.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we're going to have to go, of course. I think we've had Chris Smith on from Tennessee and may have had somebody else on from Tennessee. We're going to have to kind of keep an eye on Tennessee as a state that maybe the fact, like I said, they are so quiet and they have a little more dignified brand of politics, but that's probably something we need to pay more attention to and give a little more kudos to.
Have you noticed how the pendulum swings up there a lot, too? The voters move comfortably between the two parties electing people so that one party just does not dominate that state for a lengthy period of time. Have you ever noticed that about Tennessee?
I have noticed that about Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it makes it interesting in that they do have four cities and no one city can dominate. I mean, in Georgia,
right.
You have Atlanta that can dominate. In Alabama, you have Birmingham. Arkansas, you have Little Rock. But there you have these four cities that, they all, I guess you'd say three of them with the University of Tennessee have professional sports. It's just they all have claims to fame that, kind of make them a major player in their state. Even though it's kind of a national story, but it has a little more of a Georgia feel because the tournament came. But I could not let this one go. Herman Cain this came out is, of course, he's been having speeches and he's been making a quote about the tragedy in life does not lie in reaching your goals. It lies in not having goals to reach from. And apparently Dr. Benjamin Mays, president of Morehouse, had said that. Also, Albert Schweitzer, Peace Prize winner, had also said something very similar. But Herman Cain, to me, the fact that he said something similar in a speech, I'm not sure if he ever claimed it was his own quote before this. I don't have a problem with that so much. But I was kind of vexed in the fact that he was so excited that Khloe Kardashian had tweeted this quote, and that's when he took credit for it. But, Catherine, I have to ask you, why is Herman Cain getting so excited that Khloe Kardashian is recognizing Herman Cain quotes? From what I understand, back in the summer of 2008, the Republicans claimed that the president, who at the time was the senator, was just, you know, a star for the sake of stardom, like Paris Hilton and Britney Spears. But my goodness, the Kardashians, they fit that mold perfectly, or for famous for being famous. What does a good Republican care about what they think?
I have no idea. And I mean, those Kardashians, I mean, I admit I'm a celebrity hound, but not the Kardashians. No, no. Nothing to do with them. I don't really know anything about them. Except that
nobody knows what they're famous, but they are now, and they seem to have a lot of professional athletes that, you know, flock to them. I think, one or two are married to professional athletes, but, I mean, it's just they're famous for the sake of being famous. Well, you know,
well,
Herman Cain just got all excited.
From a Cheerios box to the Kardashians.
Tim, what do you make of this?
Well, a bigger issue is, why is this guy even getting press? Well, I guess because he got in the water first. I mean, he even got a thread on the Hedgehog Report, and we talked about him one day. Let him enjoy his little 15 minutes, and it's 1% to 3% of the vote. That's all he gets. If he accidentally gets more, that does not reflect his popularity, but rather the weakness of the field. I'm just seeing Gary Bauer or somebody like that, or Alan Keyes all over again. Not as wild as them, but similar results, aren't you, David?
Oh, yeah. I don't think he's going a lot of places. Well,
yeah.
I guess while we're on presidential politics, I don't know if we should explore Newt or Newt Explore, but you would think if you type in Explore Newt 2012 or Newt Explore 2012, that you'd get two Newt Gingrich sites, but apparently you don't. You type in... in fact, I'm about to do it. If you type in Explore Newt 2012, y'all may be doing this with me, you would get, you'd get
Buddy Romer's
site.
Yeah.
Buddy Romer, if you Explore Newt first. Now, if you Newt Explore, you get Newt and his wife. They're already exploring their presidential possibilities. We'll just say a quick side is Buddy Romer, on the side, he doesn't run away from the fact that he was governor back in, I believe, 1988. Is that? Yeah.
That sounds right.
He was in Congress from 81 to 88 as a conservative Democrat. That won't help in the Republican primary. And then 88 to 1992. Basically, this guy was getting out of politics when President Clinton was getting into national politics. That's how long ago this guy served. I mean, he hangs a lantern on his problem. And then, of course, he wears that spiffy shirt that he probably wore back when he was in office. I don't know if that one's in style, but like I was telling you before the show, I think Juliana ought to get on that one, Catherine. And then, of course, if we go to the other site, it actually is Newt Gingrich's site, and it has a picture of his wife, controversial, is this third or fourth wife, and it's
third.
Like she's running as a, you know, she ran for vice president, the way they're featured on that site. Tim, what did you make of these sites?
Well, actually, the Romer site was better done than the real Gingrich site.
not much there on Gingrich's site to do, was there? I hope he didn't pay much for that. Now, here's an interesting thing. There's, of course, a way to connect to his Facebook. He has 100,000 followers on Facebook. Barack Obama has 18.5 million. Better get busy there, Newt. Oh, don't you think, Catherine?
Yeah. Well, I just want to say this website might not have cost much, but I think the airbrushing on those photographs was very expensive.
Yeah, Gingrich just did look Yeah, the Gingrich just did look a little better there. Did y'all think it was strange that he featured her so prominently?
I do.
I just thought that was interesting. That was unusual. And then also, and he got put on, I don't know if it's fired or put on leave from Fox News while he sorts out his presidential ambitions. I take it Rupert Murdoch is backing a different Republican. But then why can't his wife get on there? And, she looks like they're morning show people. And then here's another thing I have to ask. These random people waving flags, looking up to the sky, not looking at the Gingriches, look like they're looking up at the heavens.
Yeah, really.
Like a daytime fireworks show. Why did he rope these poor people into the thing? I couldn't figure out them for anything.
Oh, man.
It was pretty interesting, but I think that's about all we have time for tonight on the Cozy Vine, and we just scratched the surface of some of our stuff around the country. Next week, I have it on good authority, we're going to talk about some Louisiana politics. Apparently, Fat Tuesday's this Tuesday, and Mardi Gras is going on in full swing, and if you're trying to get somebody from New Orleans to give up a Mardi Gras party to come talk politics on radio, it just ain't going to happen, so we'll probably have somebody from the Daily Kingfish next week. But until then, good evening.
Thank you.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that bird.